This is the Winchester Talking Newspaper for the week ending the 19th of September 2025. Hello and welcome to the Winchester District Talking Newspaper with extracts from the Hampshire Chronicle for the week ending the 19th of September. Your readers today are Noel Thorpe-Tracy.
Hello.
Heather Thorpe-Tracy.
Hello.
And Jane Harding.
Hello.
And I'm your presenter, Steve Russell. The main headlines this week are Weekly Food Waste Recycling Scheme, Protecting a Much-Loved Nature Reserve, and Overcrowded Prison Needs Urgent Action. So may we have the first story behind the first headline, please.
Weekly Food Waste Recycling Scheme. Winchester City Council is introducing weekly food waste recycling collections across the district. Starting from October, the service will launch in phases, with all households having a weekly collection by the end of March 2026. They will soon start receiving a small grey container for the scraps. Civic chiefs say collecting food waste separately significantly reduces the amount of waste sent for incineration. Instead, it's taken to an anaerobic digestion plant, where it will be converted into renewable energy and fertiliser for farms. The service is estimated to cut emissions by 1,900 tonnes of carbon dioxide a year. Sort of equivalent to driving 190 times round the world in a petrol car. Collections will take place weekly on residents' usual bin day, and households will receive everything they need to start recycling food waste up to 3 weeks before their collection starts. This includes a small grey kitchen caddy, an outdoor bin with a locking handle, a starter roll of compostable liners, communal properties were provided with shared outdoor wheelie bins. 9 specialist food waste collection vehicles have been purchased, fuelled by hydro-treated vegetable oil instead of diesel. And the new food waste recycling vehicles have arrived at the Barfield Close Depot, reducing carbon emissions by up to 94%. Councillor Steve Cramoison, Cabinet Member for Recycling and Public Protection, said, "We know that Winchester District residents are highly motivated to see recycled their waste. A recent Rethinking Recycling survey showed that residents would welcome a household food waste collection. Most of us are really careful not to waste food, but some waste is unavoidable, like peelings, chicken or fish bones, coffee grounds or tea bags, and this new service will enable our district to recycle food waste into energy, reducing cardboard emissions and going greener faster. I encourage everyone to take part when their service starts. Residents will soon start receiving their bin calendars alongside a letter introducing food waste collections. They can find out when their food waste collections start on the council website at www.winchester.gov/UK/food waste.
Protecting a much-loved nature reserve by Eve Thompson. Improvements are underway to protect a much-loved nature reserve. Hampshire and the Isle of Wight Wildlife Trust are continuing work to replace the visitor steps at St Catherine's Hill Nature Reserve, aiming to ensure safe and sustainable access to the top of the historic Iron Age hill fort. The existing steps, installed nearly 30 years ago, had significantly deteriorated and now require frequent safety checks and repairs. Their poor condition made access more difficult and led some visitors to stray from the path, creating unofficial routes that damage the site's fragile chalk grassland and continue to erosion of and contribute to the erosion of the ancient monument. Jane Chapman, Senior Nature Recovery Manager, Central Rivers and Downs at Hampshire and the Isle of Wight Wildlife Trust, said, when steps become difficult to use, people often take alternative routes, which can damage the fragile chalk grassland and erode this important archaeological site. The reserve's many chalk grassland plants and butterflies are less likely to be disturbed when visitors remain on the steps rather than creating new, unsanctioned paths. The new steps will provide a safe, slip-resistant route for visitors constructed from timber treated with an anti-slip coating. They're designed to last for at least 30 years, reducing the need for ongoing repairs and helping to preserve the site for future generations. The project would also help protect the hill fort, which is listed on Historic England's at-risk register due to reasons including erosion. Ms. Chapman said, St. Catherine's Hill is one of Winchester's most treasured wild places. She described the hill as being home to a wide range of butterflies, including the Chalk Hill Blue, Adonis Blue and Silver-Spotted Skipper, as well as frog orchids, bastard toad flax and a variety of chalk grassland invertebrates. The project is supported by Winchester College, who own the land, and is being delivered with the necessary permissions from Historic England, Natural England and the South Downs National Park Authority. It also supports the goals of the South Downs National Park Management Plan by improving public access while conserving heritage and balancing conservation priorities to protect the hill for future generations. Funding for the scheme has come from the South Downs National Park Authority's Community Infrastructure Levy and a legacy gift from a supporter who wished to help others experience nature. The Trust have thanked visitors for their patience during the works, which are expected to be completed by November 2025. During the construction, sections of the existing steps and bridleway will be temporarily closed. All materials are being carried by hand to avoid vehicle damage to the site. A small buffer zone on the wildflower meadow is to be used to store materials, temporarily pausing new growth, but expected to recover naturally next season. The Trust also hopes to install an eco-post counter at the base of the steps to monitor visitor numbers. Meanwhile, Hampshire and the Isle of Wight Wildlife Trust have announced the reopening of Winnall Moors Nature Reserve in central Winchester following recent improvement works. The reserve was closed from late July while the ageing boardwalk was replaced. The new structure offers a smoother, safer, and more accessible route through the wetlands habitats. Samuel Martin, Reserves Officer of Itchen Valley at the Trust, said, "Winnall Moors is such a special place. It's where nature and city life meet so beautifully. Seeing people of all ages reconnect with this landscape, pausing to watch a kingfisher flash past, or hearing warblers in the reeds, is what makes all the hard work worthwhile. I'm delighted that visitors can once again enjoy this wild sanctuary on Winchester's doorstep." Winnall Moors is managed by the Trust in partnership with Winchester City Council.
And here we have overcrowded prison needs urgent action. New report flags drug use, low staffing and violence. Staff shortages at Winchester Prison are leading to increased tensions, more violence and worsening mental health issues for prisoners, a new report has found. HMP Winchester was placed under urgent notification by the Chief Inspector of the Prison Inspectorate in autumn 2024. Now, concerns have been raised at HMP Winchester by the Independent Monitoring Board, IMP, in its 2024-25 annual report, published on September the 17th. It flagged issues such as low staffing levels, drug use and increased violence. The report identified limited access to activities and education as a result of low staffing levels, which is affecting the well-being of prisoners. Murray Weston, acting chair of the IMB at HMP Winchester, said, HMB Winchester, like so many ageing, overcrowded local prisons in England, faces severe and long-standing challenges, but staff are responding positively to improve conditions and outcomes for prisoners. However, the board remains concerned about the low number of prisoners accessing appropriate education and activities. Following recent news that the education budget is facing a cut of 7.5% and the locally commissioned education services a cut of 20%, this is a further challenge to obtaining improvement. The report also highlighted an increase in the discovery of illicit substances, including powerful artificial opioids and cannabinoids. A former inmate, who did not want to be named but served time in 2024, described widespread use of the synthetic drug spice. He said, "I'm not surprised. This is nothing new. There is no structure, no monitoring or anything. It's disgusting. Visitors brought drugs in all the time, especially spice. Dogs don't sense it, so they soak it in on paper and then they can smoke it in vape. It's really common. People were always off their head on spice, and at the end of the day, the security are overworked and underpaid, and they just don't care anymore." The IMB said the supply of drugs inside the prison plays a part in increased violence, prisoner poor health, and recidivism. Despite these challenges, the board acknowledged positive effects by staff. The IMB noted that staff at every level remained responsive and adaptive in pursuit of the improvement of conditions and outcomes for prisoners. One of the improvements highlighted in the report was the creation of a specialised landing for neurodivergent prisoners. This area has seen a reduction in violence and an increase in engagement in purposeful activity. Danny Chambers, MP for Winchester, said, "This report just further demonstrates the long-running effects of over a decade of Conservative cuts. It's clear to me that the staff at HMP Winchester are doing their best under really challenging circumstances, so they have my thanks for their dedication. When we're in desperate need of reinvestment across so many areas of public service, like our crumbling hospitals and care services, it's very easy for governments to leave prisons at the bottom of the list. But I think this is another example, like our hospitals, where we can actually spend to save. As the report highlights, if you don't have enough staff, if you don't have the right infrastructure, if you don't provide rehabilitation services, conditions will get worse and reoffending rates will climb back up, costing us even more money in the long run. People voted for a change from never-ending Conservative cuts. This government needs to turn a corner and start showing how they're any different."
And that concludes the headlines. And now we continue with death notices, then Christian comment, followed by letters to the editor, Chronicle comment, first person and Belgarum. This will be followed by announcements. And these are the death notices this week. Bates, Dr. John Charles, it's great sadness. The family announced the passing on 8th of September. He was 87. Bannister, Brenda, aged 88 on Tuesday the 9th. Dr. Jeff Barrett, aged 79 on the 26th of August. Alan Binfield died peacefully on 1st of September 2025. Carr, David Robert Harrison Carr. We sadly announced the death of David, who died peacefully, St Michael's Hospice, 22nd of August, age 78. Glenn Chevis, or Chevis, passed away peacefully, age 89, on the 31st of August. Gutsell, Rodney John, passed away peacefully on the 1st of September, age 87. Howells Chandler, Amanda, Nee Howells. Amanda died unexpectedly, 23rd of August, age 47. Male, Anne Victoria, passed away peacefully at Winchester Hospice on 30th of August, 77. Statham, Steve Dennis, passed away peacefully at home, on the 3rd of September, 63 years old. Trot, Joyce Margaret, known as Joy, passed away peacefully at her home on the 1st of September, aged 92. And Woolston Barbara, née Maton, passed away peacefully 26th of August, aged 75. And that concludes the death notices. And we now have Christian comment.
Finding the answers in new questions, the Reverend Sally Womersley of Romsey Abbey writes, "You broke the bonds and you loosed the chains, carried the cross and bore my shame. Yes, I believe it, but I still haven't found what I'm looking for." These words are from probably the most well-known song by the band U2. Bono, the band's lead singer, put the song's success down to the fact that it wasn't affirmative in the ordinary way of a gospel song. "It's restless," he said, "yet there's pure joy in it somewhere." He said, "People expect you, as a believer, to have all the answers, when really all you have is a whole new set of questions." I tend to agree with Bono on this, especially when we see a world where there is so much all around us that can sometimes feel frightening and disorienting, where many places are ravaged by conflict and hatred, with so many people suffering and dispossessed. For people of faith, it is perfectly understandable that we would want God to fix the world's problems. The Bible tells us that Jesus came among us as someone who in every way was and is like us. He knows our sorrows and pain, what breaks our hearts and what gives us joy. The Christian life is about holding on to a belief in the kingdom of God while living in a world that falls a long way short of all that we hope for. When God's purposes are everywhere fulfilled, it's about... I misread that. May I do it again? I'm so sorry. The Christian life is about holding on to a belief in the kingdom of God while living in a world that falls a long way short of all that we hope for when God's purposes are everywhere fulfilled. It's about trusting, but also about searching for something you've yet to find. It's about having faith, but also about living with unresolved questions and contradictions. To echo Bono's comment, as a believer, I don't have all the answers, but I do know that to live in love is to live out the love of God, which overflows to others. The Reverend Sally Womersley.
This comes from Susan Dorset, and it says, "Feeling bereft over the buses. I have been reliant on bus services since relocating to Hampshire 28 years ago. For 26 of those years, I have used the former services covering Knightwood and Valley Park for work, health, recreation and socialisation. I feel bereft, along with the many thousands of residents who, like me, are reliant upon public transport. I do not drive, as I have limited mobility, and have felt forced to give up the volunteer roles and other activities I love due to these systematic progressive cutbacks to our bus services over the past 25 plus years. I've had great difficulty accessing essential medical care and have been prevented from regularly visiting my elderly father, who does not live in Hampshire, that has Alzheimer's and terminal cancer. I'm not alone, and I know many in our communities who have faced similar devastating restrictions. I'm campaigning for everyone who wants and needs excellent, reliable, frequent public transport connections, and everyone who wants to reduce traffic congestion to help our environment. I know that a growing number of Hampshire friends and neighbours are also campaigning to save and restore their local bus services, while Hampshire County Council are boosting profit by making urban routes with government BSIP monies that we understood were intended to protect and improve vital vulnerable routes like ours. After organising the campaign, I feel an enormous responsibility to everyone. We simply cannot live without the degree of independence that our former bus services provided. Physical mental health, the economy, the housing market, and our beautiful environment are suffering. I offer up a silent prayer that Hampshire County Council and Stagecoach will at last help us, rather than leaving us isolated, frightened and excluded. However, I feel comforted and strengthened by my conversations and gentle encouragement from the lovely Winchester City Chaplain, who approached me recently after my amazingly supportive Knit and Natter friends had told her about the bus campaign. Sadly, the bus cuts will prevent me from continuing at Knit and Natter for the foreseeable future. I have very mixed feelings today, tinged with great sadness at the loss to our once vibrant community. The practical anxiety of how on earth will neighbours, especially those in Knightwood, the farthest from facilities, many with mobility problems and advancing years, be able to leave their homes for the essentials of daily life, never mind for the equally vital companionship and fun. Could I have done more? No. Will Hampshire County Council and Stagecoach do an 11th hour U-turn and provide at least an emergency alternative service? The dark nights and winter weather are approaching fast. Throughout the journey, as part of my bus campaign, people joined us at their bus stops, many with limited mobility to the extent that we ran out of disabled seating, so had to shuffle around as best we could to accommodate everyone. Someone also pointed out to me that the Stagecoach bus interiors are not well adapted for mobility aids and disabled passengers as some other modern bus interiors. I tried to talk with as many passengers as possible and check who is happy to join in group photos for campaign media coverage. One kind gentleman thought we were fundraising and said he would like to contribute. I felt overwhelmed but hastened to explain that we don't take a penny. What we do is entirely voluntary and at our own expense. A young gentleman who is a bus enthusiast and travels extensively filming his trips for his YouTube channel wanted to record this last historic trip. He told us he used to use the 46 bus regularly when it was an hourly service 6 days a week. He felt sad at its fate. Our bus service is valued and essential to wider Hampshire community. Several passengers had appointments, so we have a swift photo session and then reviewed the situation and future plans. Everyone seemed more subdued on the way back as reality hit home. Let's work together to bring back connected public transport services for all our communities and not just the town and city centre profit-making routes. Let's end the growing postcode lottery. We are appealing to all bus transport providers and Hampshire County Council to work with us in our communities now. We're asking residents throughout Hampshire to continue writing to your MP, local councillors and the head of passenger transport, Councillor Lulu Bowman at the Castle, Winchester. We would like to thank all the many supportive Stagecoach staff who have looked after us over the decades. We will remember you. We hope to travel with you again when the future of bus travel with a connected network for all our communities is assured. Meanwhile, the campaign work continues. Failure really isn't an option. And that's from Susan Dorset, Knightwood, Chandler's Ford.
And another bus letter from Trish Lavery of Colden Common, who writes, "Too expensive." Further to my previous letter concerning the axing of the 61 service and the rerouting of the 69 service, matters other than inconvenience arise. Workers and students travelling to Eastleigh will incur an extra £30 a week, thereby costing £60 for 5 daily return journeys of less than 10 miles. For workers outside central Winchester, a similar problem will arise, notably NHS workers at the hospital. For some people, £30 might be a round of drinks, but for many bus travelling workers, it means food on the table. Regarding the rerouting of the 69 service via the motorway, how safe is it to be unbelted in a bus travelling at speed? What about standing passengers and those on those sideways facing seats? And that's from Trish Lavery, Sunningdale Park, Colden Common.
Crass Decision headlines a letter from H.R. Harwood about the buses. With reference to the Hampshire Chronicle dated August the 30th, may I contribute further on the subject of bus service provision and the changes affecting Route 69 in Winchester? The decisions made do not meet the needs of passengers, particularly the retired population. It reflects a shameful, pathetic, and disgraceful ignorance on the part of Stagecoach and Hampshire County Council. As a result of changes in the law affecting older car drivers, which will become evident in the coming months, many of the decisions regarding bus routes in Winchester are already outdated. Changes that divert Route 69 onto the M3 between junctions 11 and 10 are completely nonsensical. In effect, the 69 will now bypass most of Winchester, depositing passengers at the Broadway at the bottom of the city centre. This will leave them to fend for themselves in reaching their destinations, all for the sake of saving a few minutes that will be more than lost every time there is a hold-up on the M3. Puzzling. The passengers will derive no benefit from this mindless act of vandalism. Route 69 is the only public transport lifeline connecting communities from Twyford to Wickham and is there to serve all those people in society who, for whatever reason, physical or financial, are unable to sit behind the wheel of a motor car. The route, which came a long distance to Winchester, needed to be revised to make it more user-friendly, so that it connected with the Royal Hants County Hospital as well as the railway station. That would typically be the case in any city bus route planning. However, this has been historically absent in Winchester. Whoever is responsible for this crass decision to bypass the city centre fails to understand the basic principles of running public transport, which is the need for convenient, reliable, regular, seamless travel connections. If, as it appears, the 69 receives public funding, then its existence should be to route it to provide maximum support and benefit to the public through accessibility and connections. In the process, growing the patronage by saving the needs of the majority, in bypassing Winchester, it fails on all counts. How on earth can this be justified? A very important factor that both HCC and Stagecoach are overlooking is that from September the 1st, 2025, the over 70s will need to provide a health certificate and an eye from their GP and an eye test when applying to renew their driving licence. Self-certification, as in the past, will no longer be allowed when completing a driving licence renewal application. In the UK, there are approximately 6 million drivers over the age of 70. Many will be living along the cord between Twyford and Wickham, served by the 69, and are going to need to rely on the route. Route 69 will be their lifeline. Many may be unwell or have mobility problems and will likely have hospital appointments to attend or require onward travel by train from Winchester. Now that they're no longer able to drive their car, the 69 will need to be routed accordingly to provide for the essential connections. And to provide for this, the 69 will need to be rerouted through Badger Farm Road or Stanmore Lane if it is to provide a seamless connection with the hospital, Winchester Railway Station, St Cross, the theatre and cinema, as a bus route should. H.R. Harwood, Hackworth Gardens, Hedge End.
And Milo Katsikari, on behalf of Breast Cancer Now, says, please join me. Excuse me. Last year, at 34, I was diagnosed with breast cancer, and my world changed overnight. Surgery, chemotherapy and radiotherapy were some of the toughest challenges I've ever faced, not only physically, but emotionally too. Attending Breast Cancer Now's Moving Forward course at the end of hospital treatment was a turning point, and the friendships and support I found there reminded me just how powerful it is to share our stories. That's why this October I'll be proudly joining the charity's Wear It Pink for a celebration with friends and family, raising money for Breast Cancer Now's life-saving research and life-changing support services. I encourage you to join me and throw on something pink at home, school, work or with friends. Breast cancer is the most common cancer in the UK, and no one should have to face it alone. Will you join me and wear it, Pink Community, on October 24th? Sign up today at wearitpink.org/signup and help us move forwards to a future where everyone with breast cancer lives and lives well. That's from Milou Katsikari on behalf of Breast Cancer Now.
And Angela Shale writes, another bus one, it's our lifeline. Trish Lavery's and Chris O'Neill's letters, September the 4th, highlight problems created by cuts to bus services and bus routes caused by Hampshire County Council withdrawing subsidies for these services. A good bus service is a lifeline for many retired people, allowing them to access medical appointments and other services, shop and simply enrich their lives by getting out and meeting other people. The concessionary bus pass is a great asset, but not much of use if we do not make a good bus service. To make matters worse, many of us only found out about these changes from notices on bus stops and by word of mouth from other bus users. This perhaps illustrates a lack of understanding of how important these cuts are to many people. And that was from Angela Shale of Fareham.
And yet another one. Petition thanks. Edna Bowden writes, the Full Flood Bus campaign team wish to thank all the residents who signed the petition appealing against the decision to discontinue the number 4 bus service. And also thank the large number of residents, including some children, who turned up for the final journey of the bus on Saturday the 30th of August. The petition closed with over 300 signatures and has been passed to the local MP, Danny Chambers. Let's hope we achieve a satisfactory outcome for all parties concerned, the return of a bus service to the Full Flood area in the not-too-distant future. Edna Bowden, Greenhill Road, Full Flood, Winchester.
And Celia Thomas, who is Baroness Thomas of Winchester, says she's proud of our MP. I congratulate my colleague in Parliament, Dr. Danny Chambers, MP for Winchester, for getting his private member's bill through the House of Commons. It was being debated in the Lords on Friday, September the 5th. The Animal Welfare, Import of Cats, Dogs and Ferrets Bill closes loopholes to deal with puppy smuggling. Amongst other things, it bans heavily pregnant and mutilated cats and dogs being imported and kittens and puppies under 6 months old. So popular was the bill that applause rippled through the Commons at the end of the very short introductory debate, provoking the Speaker to say, "How dare members clap?" No wonder members, MPs clapped. It is very unusual for a private member's bill to become law, particularly if it's sponsored by a new member. Pet lovers should be proud of our MP, Celia Thomas, Baroness Thomas of Winchester.
And Pauline Lutman writes, I'm not silly. I live in a little village and pay my rates to Winchester City Council. We have been using a service which the council subsidises since our bus was cut off many years ago. The council is now expecting us to use another scheme called Winchester Connect to do our shopping, and we have to pay £9 each trip. I'm 79, I have a bus pass and I'm disabled. They must think I'm silly. From Pauline Lutman, Cheryl Heath.
Change of topic. Michael Davis writes, too many bins. As to 88-year-olds trying to keep up with everything that modern life throws at us, mobile phones, computers, all of modern technology, and the fact that a simple thing like booking a doctor's hospital appointment requires texts, passwords, six-figure codes, the last thing we want is another waste bin to worry about. But that is what our council has foisted upon us. And not one, but two for food waste. I already rely on my neighbours to remind me which bin, black, household waste, brown, compostable, goes out on which day. And then, of course, there are green bags for garden refuse on alternate Tuesdays. Now we have grey bins to go out fortnightly, into which we are instructed to put our used tea bags and plate scrapings. As elderly and forcibly inactive pensioners, we don't eat much and we waste even less. I suggest the cost of this latest enterprise could have been put to better use. Michael G. Davis, Joy's Lane, Chilbolton.
And John Pittman is writing about representation overload. Does this small country of ours really require 650 members of parliament, along with 78 Hampshire County councillors and another 39 Eastleigh Borough councillors, to ensure it runs efficiently? Eastleigh Borough Council is one of the highest debited councils in the country, some £622 million in debt. They spent millions supporting a hotel at the then Rose Bowl, which will never be used by a number 61 bus passenger. They spent millions demolishing the lovely council offices in Lee Road, only to spend even more on the refurbishment of Eastleigh House in Margaret Street. They are spending millions more supporting Horton Heath 1. Can I ask the Liberal Democrat Council to maybe reduce the number of paid councillors by one, paid nearly £9,000 annually, which would go some way in paying and restoring the number 61 bus? I cannot believe that these two neighbouring towns do not have a direct bus link, and one that also took in the Royal Hampshire County Hospital. Just a thought, the Blue Star number one service, which operates between Southampton and Winchester, now operates every 10 minutes. Could not one of these buses be rerouted once an hour and then run it through Eastleigh to Winchester? It may surprise, maybe a surprise, how many passengers they may attract on this, on the new route. I just ask the Eastleigh Liberal Democrat councillors to give the cost of supporting the number 61 bus route some more thought. And that's from John Pittman, Torrey Close, Orbrook, Eastleigh.
And Donald Black writes, taxing times. We have seen an exodus of wealth following the last budget. If even more taxes are levied on those who work and their savings, we will see an exodus of those with skills. People who work hard to provide for their future and their children, and if they are prevented from doing so, they will depart to countries that are more appreciative of their skills, to the detriment of the UK economy. And that's from Donald Black, Sarum Close, Winchester.
Support for the RAF Benevolent Fund is asked for by Air Commodore Simon Harper. On September the 15th, the nation commemorated the 85th anniversary of Battle of Britain Day, when the remarkable generation that became known as the Few fought and won against incredible odds in the skies over southern Britain. During the height of the battle in summer of 1940, the then chair of the RAF Benevolent Fund, the Viscount Wakefield, wrote to a national newspaper highlighting that the wonderful achievements of the Royal Air Force in these critical weeks have naturally led to various suggestions being made as to the best way in which the heroism and sacrifices of our airmen can be assessed or our debt to them in any way liquidated. In the near future, there must be heavy calls on the RAF Benevolent Fund. 85 years on, the RAF Benevolent Fund continues to stand alongside the Royal Air Force. From the first day in uniform, throughout service, the transition to civilian life and into retirement, we are with the RAF family every step of the way. Today, we answer thousands of calls for help, supporting individuals and families in financial hardship, veterans facing loneliness and isolation, carers in need of respite, and those struggling with mental health. As we commemorate and remember the courage and sacrifice of all those who played such a vital role in the Battle of Britain, we recognise that the Royal Air Force of today continues to protect the skies above the United Kingdom. As they do, the RAF Benevolent Fund, like it did in 1940, stands with the RAF, ready to provide meaningful, lasting and tailored support to those who serve, those who have served, and their families. The demand for our support never ends. If you know anyone who would benefit from the life-changing services we provide, you can telephone us on 0300 102 1919. I'll repeat that. 0300 102 1919, and that's signed by Air Commodore Simon Harper, OBE, MA, FCIPD, Director of Operations, RAF Benevolent Fund.
And Simon Lever asks, what's in a name? W.H. Smith's name is iconic. Since Victorian times, their well-known shops have served the public well. To change the name to a new owner is not really ideal. Everyone knows W.H. Smith. W.H. Smith is instantly recognisable. T.G. Jokes? Simon Lever, Juniper Close, Winchester.
And that concludes Letters to the Editor. We continue with Chronicle Comment.
Editorial comment. Another damning report on prison. Persons sit at the edge of our prisons, sit at the edge of our towns and cities, and at the edge of our conscience. Because most of us will never go inside, it is tempting to look away. But when prisons fail, the consequence do not stay behind the wall. They walk back into our streets, our workplaces, and our homes. A prison in poor condition does not simply punish, it incubates violence, addiction, and despair. Overcrowded cells, broken sanitation, and too few trained officers create places where assaults rise, drugs flourish, and rehabilitation shrinks to a slogan. People leave more damaged than when they arrived, and the public pays twice, first for the sentence, then for the crimes committed on release. This is also a question of value for money. We spend billions to warehouse people in crumbling estates while cutting the very services that reduce reoffending: education, mental health support, drug treatment, purposeful work. Every pound diverted from hope to hopelessness is a pound wasted, and it is the taxpayer who foots the bill. There is a moral clarity here too. In a humane society, the punishment is the loss of liberty, not the loss of dignity. The rule of law is strengthened, not weakened, when the state upholds safety and decency for those in its care. Prison staff deserve safe workplaces. Victims and their families deserve a justice system that actually reduces harm. And there is a local stake. Businesses need a workforce ready for a second chance. Police, courts and councils carry the costs when her rehabilitation fails. Communities are safer when sentences are purposeful, not performative. We should care about the poor state of prisons because indifference is expensive, dangerous and unworthy of us. Fixing them is not soft, it is smart, just and in the national interest. It protects victims, rebuilds lives and strengthens communities we share.
We now move on to first person.
Yes, and first person is George Hayter, who's going to tell us how I clean my glasses. If you don't wear glasses, you're lucky. I do wear glasses, and every time I have a shower, I have to end with an extra minute or two getting my glasses clean. First, I take the glasses off and wet them under the shower head. Then I rub a spot or two of shower gel over the front and back of both lenses. Then I rinse the lather off the lenses and hang the glasses on the shower door, ready for drying when I get out. This article is not offering advice on how to clean spectacles. Rather, it is about advice from experts generally and whether it is a good idea to follow such advice without question. My experience with glasses is just an example of the dilemma that advice from experts can pose. Every optician I've dealt with over the last 30 years has warned me not to wash my glasses with shower gel and warm water. Oh no, they say, shower gel would damage the thin coating on the lenses. Instead of my glasses being warm washed, they should be gently wiped with a special cloth. Supplied by opticians, all opticians I have dealt with have said, after several decades, I've exhausted both sides of Winchester High Street, having my eyes tested in pretty much every optician's. Over the years, I've asked every optician testing my eyes whether it's okay to carry on washing my glasses in the way I've described. Every time they have warned me, in shocked tones of concern, that I should not wash them. That optician's advice conflicts with my experience, which is that gently washing glasses with shower gel is in fact a very good thing to do. It's done my glasses no discernible harm, and the benefit, wow, I get clear glasses el perfecto. It's as if I'm not wearing glasses at all, not a single smear, speck or smudge. Wearing glasses can feel a bit like looking through a window, with you separated from the world by dirty glass. But with super clean lenses, the window seems to disappear. Optically speaking, it's heaven. After me and my glasses have had a shower, the glasses stay effectively dust-free for 24 hours. No noticeable dirt appears during that time, and as long as no one touches the lenses, particularly if no mud, food or sun oil have been handled. I've been wearing glasses since about 1993. At first, I needed them only for the close activity, like reading and painting. Wearing them when looking far made things blurred, so I couldn't wear them all the time. That meant I had to carry them with me constantly, in case I wanted to look at something small. I was putting them on and taking them off all the time, so I was always losing them. My eyes deteriorated, so after a few years, I had to get varifocals, which are worn all the time. That stopped me losing them. When I first wore glasses, I dutifully dry wiped them with the little cloth that opticians supply with glasses. But I kept having dirty glasses because dirtying happens gradually, so I didn't notice till they were absolutely filthy. And even then, I did use the recommended little cloth. It didn't always work. It wouldn't budge some smears or tiny sticky spots of food or something. I don't know how things got there. Anyway, what do you do? Find water and try wetting the cloth? Or spit on the cloth? So you can see why I'm reluctant to abandon the infallible regular routine of clean, spectacle perfection after every shower, contrary to expert advice. The sum of human knowledge would shrink considerably if there were no experts, and I'm happy to take their advice most of the time. They're usually right, but it would be surprising if the experts were right about everything.
And now we move on to Belgarum.
And Belgarum, an alternative look at the news, has two sections this week. The first is Hurry to See Austen Poem. Time is running out to see an original poem by Jane Austen at Winchester Cathedral. The handwritten poem, said to be perhaps the most emotional and personal of Jane's writings, is at the centre of the Jane Austen Poetry Exhibition. It is being run by the Cathedral and will come to an end on Sunday, October the 19th. The poem, which is rarely on display, will then return to the archives. The rare poem takes the form of an extraordinary emotive letter Austen wrote on her 33rd birthday to the memory of Mrs. Lefroy. Mrs. Lefroy was Austen's closest friend, with the novelist being described as very intimate with her. Professor Michael Wheeler, who has authored a book about Jane Austen and the Winchester Cathedral, praised the exhibition. He said, "This is a beautifully presented exhibition which offers the visitor insight into an important relationship. Carefully selected manuscripts and books are shown alongside Jane Austen's poem in memory of her dear friend Anne Lefroy." And that one is accompanied by a lovely photo of three people looking through the glass at the handwritten poem of Jane Austen's poem to Anne Lefroy. The second article, another lovely old one, A Time When Nobody Could Cook. When Belgarum dusted off back copies of the Chronicle for its annual open day, they spotted this job advert from 1886. It reads, "Wanted, a good cook, no Winchester person need apply. Address Mrs. Hoy's, the Hermitage, Week, Winchester," and Week is spelt W-E-E-K. Why Mrs. Hoy's was biased against local people is not explained and will probably forever remain a mystery. Perhaps a Chronicle reader might know. By the way, Week, without an E, is not a typo. That was how the suburb of Week, W-E-E-K-E, was spelt in Victorian times. Why the E was added at the end is another puzzle. And there's a little photograph of the letters in the forthright job ad from 1886. And the first one is, wanted, a good cook. No Winchester person need apply. Address, Mrs. Hoy's, the Hermitage, Week, Winchester. The second is, a superior cook with a good character who understands a dairy and baking will hear of a good situation with good wages by applying to Mrs. Fell, Worldham Rectory, Alton. And the last one we only see the top of here is, wanted in a master's house, a thoroughly good plain cook.
And now local events that are upcoming. On Friday the 26th, there is a student fundraiser for the benefit of the Railway Inn. University of Winchester student bands and solo artists clubbing together to present a fantastic night of original music to help keep their beloved local music venue open. The Railway Inn, St Paul's Hill, Winchester. That's at 7:30 p.m. on the 26th and it's £10 entry. Michaelmas Fair on the 27th of this month. It's at 10:30 a.m. It's £4. September the 27th, the Hospital of St Cross, Winchester, celebrating good food, cheer, artisan stalls, medieval reenactment, family games, workshops, classic cars. Okay. Next is Wildlife and Environment Fair. This is on the Saturday, the 27th, at 11 a.m. A fun and educational way of showing the work of local wildlife and environment groups to the communities of Oliver's Battery, Badger Farm, Winchester, and the surrounding areas. St Mark's, C of E Church, 94A, Oliver's Battery Road. It's Oliver's Battery Road South. Sunday the 28th, Apple Day at Houghton Lodge Gardens and Glasshouse. Opens at 11 a.m, £11.50. Apple enthusiasts rejoice. Houghton Lodge Gardens, popular with Apple Day, is back for another year of fruitful festivities on Sunday the 28th of September from 11 till 4. £11.50 to get in. Friday the 3rd, Dr. Richard Shepherd, Time of Death, More Unnatural Causes. Discover the secrets hidden in death with Dr. Richard Shepherd, live on stage. This autumn, 2025, Theatre Royal, Winchester. Contact the box office, it's £28.50. It starts at 8 p.m. on the 3rd. Animal Farm, 8th of October, 7:30 p.m, £15 to get in. Adapted, performed by Guy Masterson, directed by Tony Bonxer, from the book by George Orwell, celebrating 70 years of its publication. 30 years of performance, Masterson reprises his breathtaking solo, Theatre Royal, Winchester, Jury Street. And on the 11th of October, Vox Humana and Gregoriana, the Monastic Day. 7:30 p.m. It's free, and then it says £12. Don't know. Winchester-based choir sing plain chant and polyphony. St Cross, Winchester. That's about it, really. Lighting up time ends on Friday the 19th, 06:14 a.m. and begins at 19:45. On Wednesday the 24th of September, it ends at 06:55 and begins again at 19:32. If you know someone who is sight impaired and would like to receive our recordings, or if you have a problem with the recording you have received from us, please contact us on 01962 861 229. This number can also be found on the key fob attached to the memory stick. Now we continue with further items of general news. And now we continue with items of general news.
Hampshire's poor rankings in the NHS Hospital League tables. Hampshire Hospital's NHS Foundation Trust has scored poorly in the government's latest drive to improve performance in England. League tables of the best and worst performing NHS trusts in England have been published by the Department of Health and Social Care for the first time. The initiative, led by the Secretary of State for Health and Social Care, Wes Streeting, is to develop a friendly rivalry between hospitals to drive up standards. The best performing large hospital trust is Northumbria Healthcare NHS Foundation Trust, which came in at number 9. The worst performing large hospital trust is Mid and South Essex NHS Foundation Trust, which stands at 123, scoring 2.93. I think the scores must be out of 10, judging by that. According to the new table, Hampshire Hospital's NHS Foundation Trust is positioned at 101, with a score of 2.6. Alex Whitfield, chief executive of Hampshire Hospital's NHS Foundation Trust, said the league tables provide an additional source of data to help us understand both the progress we are making and the challenges that still need to be addressed. And the results highlight some real positives. We were pleased to see that we were better than the national average for cancer treatment within 62 days, the number of patients waiting over 12 hours in our emergency departments, and ensuring people who come in to us for urgent treatment receive a diagnosis within 4 weeks. Patients report positive experiences during their stays and staff engagement and well-being remain strong. We're also on track with our financial plan, all of which is a testament to the dedication and hard work of colleagues across the trust. And there's a picture of Alex smiling happily at the cameras. She continued, "At the same time, there are areas we know we can improve, including meeting the 4-hour waiting target in our emergency departments, reducing long waits for planned treatment, and supporting patients to leave hospitals more quickly once they're medically ready. We are also working closely with partners to make it easier for people to return home safely and sooner, and we continue to focus on making sure our services are as productive and efficient as possible to strengthen our financial health. The team here at Hampshire Hospitals are absolutely committed to providing safe, timely and compassionate care for every patient."
Funding Boost reopens for schools, clubs and groups. A funding boost could be on the way for schools, clubs and charities. The Haseley Group has reopened its community grant scheme for 2025, offering up to £250 in funding to support grassroots organisations with a focus on the Twyford area. It's part of the company's ongoing commitment as it delivers the final phase of development at Haseley Enterprise Park. Sarah Andrews, property director at Haseley Group, said, "We are proud to support the local groups that helped Twyford thrive. The success of last year's grants showed how even a modest funding can have a meaningful impact, from primary schools to volunteer-led sports clubs. Last year, 9 groups received grants, including Twyford, St Mary's, Church of England Primary School for a new set of thesauruses, Twyford Playgroup for outdoor construction toys, and Twyford Parish Hall for 20 new chairs. Other recipients included a first guide to Twyford, who used the funds to send volunteers to an international event, and Twyford Cricket Club, who purchased equipment for their junior section. The grant scheme also supported the Twyford Waterworks Trust with new tools for its volunteer programme. Applications for the 2025 scheme open on Monday, September the 8th, and will close on Friday, November the 1st. Eligible applicants include schools, clubs, charities and community groups.
Cyclists 250 mile challenge in aid of air ambulance. A cyclist has taken on a gruelling 250 mile challenge in support of a life-saving air ambulance service. John Duxbury, 56, from Winchester, cycled across Wales to raise funds for Hampshire and the Isle of Wight Air Ambulance, HIOWAA. John said, "This cause is close to my heart because I know firsthand the difference an air ambulance can make. Some years ago, I was airlifted to hospital with a serious head injury following a cycling accident in a remote area. I have limited memory of the incident itself, but I will always be appreciative of the care, speed and professionalism of the crew who came to my aid. All ended well for John with the bonus of a record-breaking Strava time, not on his wheels, but recorded at altitude, climbed and the speed of arrival at hospital thanks to the air ambulance. His fundraiser comes as HAOWAA has a major campaign to relocate its operations to a new purpose-built facility at Southampton Airport. The move will put the charity closer to 70% of its call-outs, reducing response times and improving patient outcomes. John's Ryde Cymru challenge took him from Llandudno on the north coast of Wales to Cardiff in the south, passing through Snowdonia and Brecon along the route. He was due to finish on Sunday. The route covers 250 miles and includes 23,000 feet of climbing, nearly the equivalent of Mount Everest. And this is accompanied by a beaming photo of John Duxbury in his cycling helmet and with his cycling top on, which has the Isle of Wight Air Ambulance motive on the front.
City leaders are under fire over a bid to sell shops. Winchester City Chiefs have come under fire after pulling the proposed sale of two historical city centre shops. The City Council has been trying to sell boarded up 158 to 159 High Street, opposite the Guildhall, for most of the year. But the Chronicle understands it has only received offers of around 100,000 to 150,000, way below the asking price, because of the poor state of the listed buildings. By stopping any sale, the council has done a U-turn after previously wanting to sell the properties because it said it could not justify spending money on repairs. City Council leader Martin Todd explained the future of the pair now needed to be tied to the Silver Hill scheme, known as the Central Winchester Regeneration, and also to the redevelopment of the building next door, 160 High Street, leased by the council to Coles Bookmakers. Councillor Todd said plans were now being drawn up for all three buildings. But former Tory City Councillor Ian Tate again attacked its handling of the properties. Mr Tate also criticised the lack of use of two floors of the council-owned building next door because of the removal of stairs. He told the Cabinet, "This administration has taken over 6 years to do virtually nothing here, other than put up some posters in the window. I seriously wonder what this administration's trying to achieve. The adjoining building in 160 High Street has Coral's Bookmaker on the ground floor, but the two further floors are empty, and even more idiotic, there are no stairs to those upper floors. They are literally marooned, inaccessible." Councillor Todd responded in detail at the meeting. The building was bought to protect the entrance to the bus station as part of the Central Winchester regeneration, and that's why we ended up with the buildings on both sides of the bus station arch, and also why 160 is not for sale. We need to maintain ownership of all the buildings to protect the future plans of regeneration. I'll be the first to admit 158 to 159 were in a shocking state. It's not safe to reoccupy them. They need major reconstruction. Because they're listed, it's going to be extremely expensive to sort out. We thought if we could sell 158 and 159, but they, and in particular the area behind it, a small courtyard, will necessarily form part of required access to 160, because there are no stairs on the ground floor in 160 to allow access to the upper floors. Like you, I'm keen to see it brought back into use. We need the courtyard at the back of 158 to 159 in order to bring 160 back into use. I'm not happy. I thought we had a way of moving forward on this. We didn't come to a deal. None of the offers were good enough to be accepted, and we are concerned that we don't lose control of the situation, as with the old Buffs Club, where we sell to somebody who gets trapped in a planning hell and unable to sort the building out.
Climate events as Green Week makes return. A week-long initiative will be raising awareness of climate change this month, from Saturday, September the 20th, to Sunday, September the 28th. Winchester Green Week, organised by volunteers, will coordinate a programme of inspiring, thought-provoking events. These events will be put on by local groups, educational institutions, businesses, faith groups, and local authorities. Events should be in line with protecting and restoring life on land, climate action, sustainable cities, responsible consumption and production and partnership. The programme coordinates a programme of inspiring, thought-provoking events by local groups, educational institutions, businesses, faith groups and local authorities. Winchester Green Week launches with Winchester Green Fair, which is on Saturday, September the 20th, from 11 a.m. to 4 p.m. at the Pavilion by the Cathedral Cafe at Winchester Cathedral. This event is organised by Winchester City Council. A detailed list of events and their corresponding times can be found on the Winchester Green Week website at winchestergreenweek.org.uk. The event comes to a close with a service for Green Week held at Winchester Cathedral on Sunday, September the 28th at 3 p.m. There's also an open invitation to the wider community to participate further by organising their own events in line with the ethos of Green Week.
And here we have, rather appropriately, Public Packs Out Chronicle Office. More than 50 people packed out the Hampshire Chronicle's office in Winchester City Centre as part of the city's Heritage Open Days. The Hampshire Chronicle office in Winchester welcomed members of the public during its annual open day on Friday, September the 12th, as part of the city's Heritage Open Days programme. Visitors toured the Upper Brook Street office, met the editorial team and browsed through historical editions and photographs. Kimberly Barber, the regional editor of the Chronicle, said, "It was a pleasure to meet so many people and hear their views. We had some really good ideas and stories put forward, which made the effort more than worthwhile." Guests also received a goodie bag, including a copy of that week's newspaper. Volunteers from charity Winchester Talking Newspaper, which records its weekly audio version of the Hampshire Chronicle for the blind and partially sighted people from the top floor, were also on hand to answer questions from the public. John Richards, chairman, said, "The open day went well, and that they hope to have attracted 3 new volunteers. Visitors were even lucky enough to see a live reading of that week's paper. 13 members of Euro Club Hampshire, a cultural exchange group hosting visitors from Nice in France, also stopped by during their city tour." Pam Thompson of Euro Club Hampshire said, "Everyone thoroughly enjoyed the visit, and it was interesting to see the back copies of the old newspapers. I didn't realise just how long the paper had been in existence." The Hampshire Chronicle was first published in 1772 and has served the Winchester community through its weekly printed paper for more than 250 years. It also operates a website which has seen a record number of visitors this week, with more than 1.5 million page views in July. It also has an app, which is popular among its nearly 900 paying subscribers, offering an ad-free experience, puzzles, and a digital replica of the printed paper. It was also named NewsQuest's News Brand of the Year at its Excellence Awards earlier this year. This is accompanied by 2 photos, one of visitors downstairs in the conference room, looking at the Chronicle's open day papers, and clearly a couple of them are very old ones, such as the one from which I was reading earlier. And upstairs is a photo of exactly where we're sitting now, with John Richards talking to the visitors, who were extremely interested in the way the whole talking newspaper for the blind worked, and all our equipment is situated in front of them.
Brave Cassidy shares her courageous journey by Kieran Wiggs. A terminally ill hospice ambassador took centre stage in front of thousands of festival goers at this year's Car Fest, and there's a photograph of a very young girl in her wheelchair, beaming, with two supporters behind her. Cassidy, an ambassador for Naomi House and Jack's Place, the only hospice in the south of England for young adults, shared her courageous journey with the Car Fest 2025 audience. The festival, founded by Chris Evans in 2012, has grown into the United Kingdom's biggest children's charity family fundraising festival. And this year it gave a remarkable young woman a chance to shine. Cassidy, who is one of the hospice's regular visitors, used the platform to highlight the work of the charity and the unique care she receives. She lives on the Isle of Wight and joined Carfest founder Chris Evans on stage, sharing her courageous journey and experiences with the crowd. Her openness and conviction touched all of them. The festival gave Cassidy an opportunity to represent the hospice, which her carer and family described as overwhelmingly positive. She's living with a terminal diagnosis and has given her heartfelt gratitude to Jack's Place for creating precious memories and for making her feel seen, heard and valued. The experience at Carfest 2025 was another unforgettable moment for her, and her carer and family said it was overwhelmingly positive for her and captured a photo of her pure joy and exhaustion upon her return to Jack's Place. Karen Sanderson, senior fundraiser at Naomi House and Jack's Place, said Carfest 2025 is always simply a brilliant event, and it has raised to date £123,638.04 for Naomi House and Jack's Place, enabling the hospice to continue its invaluable work.
City Festival with Poetry and Performance. A festival that is lighting up the city with poetry performance and heritage is being received well. Winchester Heritage Open Days are currently underway, with hundreds of visitors enjoying a packed schedule of talks, tours, exhibitions and performances. The first half of the festival has seen standout moments, including captivating medieval Winchester walking tours, fully booked Hyde 900 sessions and Hampshire History Trust's flagship talk series celebrating heritage architecture. In line with this year's theme, architecture, local specialists shared insights into how heritage and contemporary design continue to shape Winchester's identity. Community-led events have also drawn enthusiastic crowds, from roaming storytelling to hands-on workshops that brought history to life. Mesh Kuzish, festival manager, and I'm sure I've pronounced that name wrongly, said, "It's been wonderful to see the city come alive with curiosity and connection. The energy from our volunteers, partners and audiences has been incredible, and there's still so much more to discover." The festival continues through the weekend with Winchester Muse Poetry Showcase, immersive performances by Out There Actions at Winchester City Mill, and behind-the-scenes tours of the Hampshire Cultural Trust's collections store with a Regency twist. Many events are free to attend, and walk-ins are welcome where space allows. And this is accompanied by a rather laughable picture of two eager young men carrying big round shields and swords, and one of them's got a helmet on, and neither of them look as if they could stand an attack by the Vikings for 5 minutes.
Here we have much-loved shop Chocks back on High Street. A chocolate shop in Winchester has reopened after undergoing a stylish transformation. Shokoko, located on High Street, was closed to customers on Monday, September the 8th, when major changes began taking place on the interior and exterior of the shop. The branch, which has been open in Winchester since 2014, decided to update the colour scheme of their branches in Swanage, Exeter, Horsham and Winchester for a more contemporary feel. Shokoko co-founder Claire Burnett said, "We are thrilled to be open again with our refreshed new look." Viola, general member of the Winchester branch, said, "Everyone loves it. We opened on Saturday and the whole weekend was really busy, especially with our regulars. They loved it. Now there's more space and it's definitely looking smarter and more organised. We were happy to be open again. It's really important to us that everything we use is local and sustainable. There's always something going on in head office too. They're always working on new seasonal flavours. The team here are very passionate and really like our products. I think we have the best product in England because of the high cocoa percentage. The Chocolate House says it offers the best product in England as all produce is made with the highest percentage of cocoa and is conscious of creating chocolate that is not only delicious but sustainable too. All of Shokoko's products are slave-free, palm oil-free, lighter on sugar and sourced directly from growers in Colombia and Ecuador. The business also supports marine conservation projects in the UK and around the world, as well as reforestation projects in Sumatra. So far have been funding the planting of more than 10,000 cocoa trees. And this is accompanied by a delightful picture of two very happy Shokoko new customers, Jean Frost and Lucy Frost, with a young lad staff member in his apron, Freddie Gavins. And as I remember, when you buy a coffee there, you also get a free chocolate.
Polluted air order lifted from city. After more than 20 years, Winchester has rid itself of an embarrassing tag. The polluted city centre was one of the few places in Hampshire to be designated an air quality management area. A section of the M3 near Aldershot and Winchester City Centre were branded as air quality management areas, and the local authorities ordered to monitor pollution from nitrogen dioxide and particulates and take steps to make the air cleaner. Particulates, often from diesel engines, can cause harm to health, causing respiratory and other illnesses. Councillor Steve Cramoison, City Council Cabinet Member for Recycling and Public Protection, announced at Cabinet on Wednesday, September the 10th, that the government had lifted the designation. He said, "DEFRA has confirmed that air quality in the area has improved sufficiently that we no longer need to monitor it. The air quality management thing has been in place for about 20 years. It required nitrogen dioxide levels to be regularly monitored and recorded. Since 2022, the area has met the required level of nitrogen dioxide. And another pollutant, the particulates, or PM10s, have been under the required levels for 10 years, since 2015. He said the council is aiming for a new target above the required levels, and the Health and Environment Policy Committee will consider new air quality plans at its meeting on Thursday, September the 18th. Yes.
Dangerous concrete yet to be removed from Royal Hampshire County Hospital. A dangerous form of concrete is still present in Winchester's hospital, the figures show. Reinforced autoclaved aerated concrete, or RARC, a lightweight material widely used in public buildings between the 1960s and 1980s, was discovered at the Royal Hampshire County Hospital, Romsey Road, following a nationwide inspection. A scheme has been in place since 2021 to manage and remove RARC from the National Health Service estate in England, to which £1.3 billion has been allocated so far. However, recent figures show that the concrete is yet to be removed from the Royal Hampshire County Hospital. It is believed that the RARC will be removed by the end of 2025 or 2026, financial year at the end of March.
And here we have TV actors set for Sherlock Holmes roles. Classic TV stars are returning to the stage in Winchester later this month. Doctor Who's Colin Baker and The Archer's Terry Malloy will reprise their roles as Sherlock Holmes and Dr. Watson in a live radio play adaptation of Sir Arthur Conan Doyle's The Sign of Four. The performance will take place at the Theatre Royal Winchester from Tuesday, September the 30th until Wednesday, October the 1st. The play centres on the discovery of a missing fortune and the murder of Bartholomew Sholto. The plot sees Holmes delving into a mystery, starting in war-torn India and concluding in Victorian London. The production is presented by the Crime and Comedy Theatre Company, the team behind last year's The Hound of the Baskervilles. Both productions retell Conan Doyle's stories as live radio plays, with the stage transformed into a radio studio. The actors appear as if ready for a radio broadcast, and sound effects are created live on stage, aiming to transport audiences back to Victorian London.
And that concludes the extracts for this week. Thank you to our editors for selecting the extracts this week and to copying and the memory stick preparation teams. And thanks to our readers, Heather Thorpe-Tracy.
Goodbye.
Noel Thorpe-Tracy.
Goodbye.
And Jane Harding.
Goodbye.
And from me, Steve Russell, goodbye, and do have an enjoyable week. When you have finished with this week's recording, please put the memory stick back in the wallet and return it as soon as possible, placing the address label inside the wallet. Thank you.